Hi, and welcome to the fifth episode of Differential Diagnosis, where we're differentially diagnosing the sixth episode of HouseMD called The Socratic Method. My name's Harvey. I'll be hosting, and hosting with me is of my friend Gaz.
Hello, nice to be here once again.
Excellent. That was enthusiastic. Keep that energy up, Gaz.
Always.
So, yeah, well, Gaz, why don't you give us a quick little synopsis about what the episode's about for anybody who is listening to a podcast about the episode but hasn't seen it in a few years.
So this is The Socratic Method. It's the first season episode of House, which first aired on December 21st, 2004. And the synopsis is as follows. So he's currently avoiding Cuddy in the emergency room when House runs into the son of a schizophrenic woman who has been diagnosed with alcoholism. Intrigued by her schizophrenia and the fact she has a condition she's too young to get, deep vein thrombosis, or allegedly that, he takes her case and finds multiple problems. However, when the patient does something unexpected, House starts to wonder if she's really mentally ill at all.
I love the synopsises that you found. They could really relate to any episode of House.
Well, the credit is none of the credit is for me. It's all to the intrepid and diligent writers of the House MD wiki, fan wiki, the fandom wiki. Mm. Maximal respect for them.
It is a great wiki, actually. Obviously being sarcastic, but because of the formula that House takes, every episode synopsis is House treats a person of X demographic, but things aren't always what they seem.
Well, yeah, but it takes a lot of effort to formulate each and every one individually, even if that is some sort of really strange, perverse obsession. But it may not just be one person. It could be hundreds of people, hundreds of diligent fans of House who maybe want to listen to this podcast and, you know, get even more insight from the critical faculties that we possess and our keen eye for detail.
Absolutely. They could learn a thing or two, I bet. Right, well, That's the episode we're going to be looking at. Let's get into it. Let's differentially diagnose HouseMD, Episode 6, The Socratic Method. It's a very unusual episode because after the cold open with the schizophrenic mother having deep vein thrombosis and collapsing, it immediately opens with the kind of establishing shot of the hospital, but a radio call from the EMTs about her condition, which, as far as I'm aware, doesn't happen at any other point. I know it's a really minor detail, but I thought it was really interesting when I saw it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's because what happens in the cold open, people, you know, I mean, it shows the CGI blood clot, but people might be confused. So it sort of just rambles out all of the symptoms over the establishing shot, which is weird because then the symptoms are then set again in this opening interaction with the child carer and the doctor who isn't House. So it's very interesting that they decided to put that in there. I wonder if that's to fill the audience in.
Just so it's kind of more crystal clear how she ended up in the hospital, I guess. Mm. The other thing that's interesting about this is that the caregiver character is definitely trying to impose order on a very messy set of affairs. Mm. He's writing down notes, he's really frantic about getting all the details right, because a lot's on the line. If he doesn't have the details, you know, it could be the difference between whether they get a benefit check or not.
Well, yeah, and right. as is established later, he's completely living a lie. He's pretending to be an 18-year-old carer And anytime anybody asks about the dependent that they've heard about, he always claims it's his younger brother, even though he is actually the dependent because he's only 15, as is revealed later. So, like, it's one of the more interesting, like, patient dynamics that it sets up, that this, like, there's a mystery to the patients. I don't think the patients before this have had that much of a mystery. So an interesting part of this this introduction to how House comes into, you know, contact with the patient is we've had patients come in via the clinic, we've had patients be referred, but this is the first time that we see House just sitting in the hospital, and he just overhears a conversation that interests him, and it like definitely makes House stand out as a bit more. I mean, at this point, they're still trying to establish House as a very strange and, like, enigmatic and strange man. And him just hanging out in a waiting room and overhearing a conversation, then being like, you're now my patient, is a really interesting way of, you know, getting the patient involved, and also just characterizing House as a bit of a...
And the other thing that I like is how House always tries to set himself apart from all the other doctors. So he went into that confrontation with the doctor, and was just like, yeah, he's just like a professional doctor. He goes and plays golf and he has a really fun time. And he has all these kind of like middle class stereotypes laid on this like inert character, I guess, just as a means to set him apart from everybody else. And I think that's something that kind of is central to House's narcissism. So he's always trying to find a way to set himself apart from everybody else.
Yeah, you're right. House definitely comes across that he just enjoys the work itself, and in some way that makes him superior to the other doctors. This comes actually up a few times during this. There's a mention of a surgeon later on, and it's a surgeon who won't do work. He won't remove a tumor because it's too big, and we'll talk about it, you know, if it comes up again. But like, House then gets really involved in tricking the surgeon and basically calling him a bit of a like loser for not wanting to take a risk and being too safe. And this comes up a lot, as you say. He definitely attacks other doctors for being treating it like a job, whereas he treats it like an obsession.
But and the other thing is, and he starts throughout the scene where he's walking with Wilson, he gives a bit of a walkthrough of how schizophrenia is typically interpreted, and also the mystery and the problem of schizophrenia. So, for instance, talking about ancient Greek Roman Greek medicine of Galen, how he would just fumigate private parts in order to cure the schizophrenia. So, and he says, well, modern techniques are just as strange as well. We just do a similar thing to that. We don't really get to the depth of the problem. And I think that's something that drives him as well, is trying to find solutions to the riddles of just any physical or mental illness.
Yeah. Schizophrenia is an interesting choice for this, because he does mention that the creator of the Socratic method, on which the episode is named, was a schizophrenic. And this is quite a weird episode, because unlike Occam's Razor, where they define what Occam's Razor is and then go on to, you know, express that concept throughout the episode as the way that they solve the patient's problem. They do this here, but they never actually say what the Socratic method is, which I don't know if it's just giving the audience the benefit of the doubt they knew what it was. I didn't know what the Socratic method was. I actually had to look this up. And so I don't know if you agree, Gaz, with my definition, but the Socratic method just appears to be just basically lots of the best way to solve a problem is through lots of conversation, lots of devil's advocacy, to just promote critical and like erratic thinking in order to solve, like in order to basically put your mind in a problem solving state. So the best way to come up with solutions to problems is to just throw everything at the wall and just see what happens.
Well, it's also about the dialectic. So it's about thinking, you put out a hypothesis and then you argue against it. And from the two things working together, you come up with a new solution. So for instance, you know, you have a thesis and an antithesis, and then you create a synthesis, and the synthesis is the thing you can use to then push knowledge forward. And it's the play between the thesis and the antithesis which will cause that to happen. And the other thing is, it's also a play on the fact that a lot of historians believe Socrates to be kind of crazy, and it's actually something that's referred to in the episode as well. So it all comes out in that. So there's a lot of depth to that theme.
Yeah. And it's interesting they use schizophrenia for this, because House says we don't know how it works. And so then because there's like no knowns, the fact that everyone is then able to come up with a thesis and an idea, and they're not necessarily immediately correct because nobody understands the disease they're talking about. So it's like, I don't want to say they use schizophrenia as a platform, but schizophrenia is an interesting condition to choose for doing something with the Socratic method, because it means that you could have lots of ideas about the cause and then lots of things to argue and lots of ideas to bounce off each other to demonstrate how the Socratic method works.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's the thing about the Socratic method is it's just a very direct metaphor for how some people interpret schizophrenia. It's lots of thoughts and ideas running around your mind, conflicting with others. And it's something that kind of gets vaguely hinted by Foreman, in the sense that he says, and Foreman and Chase, they're having a conversation of why does House interact with this particular patient, because he hasn't done it before.
Yeah.
And it happens to be in this case, that he likes the way they think, and maybe he likes to emulate the way that they think in order to solve problems. And I think that connects up with what you're saying quite neatly.
There's a lot of depth to this episode.
Yes, I agree.
No, I say that sarcastically, but I mean, just based on, like, they're doing the thing that they did in the Occam's Razor, where they take a theme and run with it. But I think the Socratic method, because it's not just like a philosophical thing like Occam's Razor, where it's kind of, I don't know, the Socratic method seems like a much more direct, like, comparison to how House comes up with ideas. And I think this episode then explores, you know, it's not just everybody for an entire episode is just talking about Occam's Razor. Because in the other episodes, they don't use Occam's Razor as a way to solve medical problems. But the team always use the Socratic method.
It's not written horribly on the nose and is overly described in the script or by the characters. Also, it was quite fun to see another clinic session, and it happens to be another kind of dispatching of a yuppie for not allowing her child to have an ice cream cake because sugar is bad. And he kind of deconstructs the mother's. So it's a mother and a daughter, and the mother goes in with her daughter and says that she has strep, but she doesn't have strep. And it's actually a ruse to try and get the doctor to lecture to the child that she can't eat sugar. And it's just hilarious in the way that he deconstructs the motives of the mother very swiftly. And just leaves by saying, just get her a goddamn ice cream cake. It's like, you've just dispatched another early millennial yuppie.
Oh, you did it. You did it, House.
Again.
Well, it's... the birthday idea as well, because they're talking about the ice cream cake with that girl. It is House's birthday throughout this episode. And that is brought up quite a lot. And I think I guess the establishing point is just because House is having his birthday and doesn't seem to care. And doesn't that make him so interesting? Because people traditionally do like their birthdays. But it just comes up a lot. He meets several people throughout the episode who it is their birthday, or it was their birthday last week. and they talk about birthdays. I just find it really funny that the birthday thing is like focused on so much, just to show that it's interesting that House doesn't care about his birthday, which is an interesting piece of characterization. But going back and looking at it now, it's very funny that that is like, there are a lot of birthdays going on.
Yeah, and also the caregiver in this, for the patient, his birthday is a week. His 15th birthday was a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think he's in such a shit situation, he doesn't get to celebrate his birthday. So it's a bit of a privilege for him to do that. And I think kind of points to the arbitrariness that House approaches these things. It's like, yeah, it's a day, give me a break.
Yeah.
At least that's what he wants people to think.
Yeah, well, so a key interesting thing about this episode, which you've already mentioned, is that House doesn't often interact with the patients, and in this one he does. But the kind of the motive for that given is that actually he just finds the patient interesting because they're mentally ill. Although I do have to say that even though that is the motive given, and that might be the only reason House is interacting with the patients, there's definitely a lot more patient drama here. And we'll discuss this next week when we go into the later episodes, but they do start focusing a lot more on the patients' lives and the patients as characters. And yeah. I think that that is a lot more engaging than the earlier House doesn't talk to the patients motif, which does start to go away because the patient drama is definitely focused on, even in episodes outside of this where House doesn't have a motive to interact with the patients. Even though House might not be talking to the patients, the show starts focusing on the patients more. And I really appreciate this episode for having such a keen focus on the patients' lives.
Yes.
Like, you know... Yeah, sorry, go on.
No, carry on.
Yeah, just like the... You know, just the... just so there's the mother's mental illness. It's the way that the son is handling it. He's in control of the situation. He's just about holding up. And then there's the fact that he's then... It turns out that he's actually not 18, he's 15, so he's lying just to keep everything going. And... yeah, just these like, I mean, they're very small at the moment, but just these like internal dramas that are going on outside of the medicine.
Yeah, but the thing about the writing is that the medicine, the undertone of the patient drama is that the themes that the patients are addressing themselves in life and death get reflected in the characters that are treating them. So it's not as straightforward as they're separated. They actually become kind of, they become very much imbricated together. They get interlocked together. And I think that's quite nice. It's from a writer's standpoint, it's really nice to see. It's like, it's not as straightforward as, oh, the patient has a drama and the people just cure it. And then the person goes on and confronts the drama at the end of the episode. It's actually, they all get kind of implicated in it. Which I think is really interesting.
Yeah, completely. The more closely and thematically tied the medicine and the patient drama is, the better the show is.
I agree. I think that's a big thing to emphasize as we go forward, when we go through the episodes, is I think that's the main, you know, when you've got a good episode, when that happens.
Yeah. Which I can totally understand why every episode can't be like that. Like, not, yeah. There aren't enough medical conditions that are like, I mean, medical conditions are just what they are. Not all of them can be thematic to human life.
Yeah.
This one's a particularly good one because there's a schizophrenia, which leads into sort of the chaos of the thought process, which, you know, is emulating the Socratic method itself. And yeah. Then there's like, and then that then causes a reversal in the way that, you know, there's the mom and son dynamic in which the son is now taking care of the mom, which leads to a lot of human drama. But it's a shame that every episode can't be that good.
Yeah.
But it would be a high ask to expect every episode to be that good. But it's really nice that they've centered on it this early in the season.
Yeah. And I think you see a few kind of interesting metaphors throughout the episode. So, for instance, The big kind of struggle or conflict in this is one between the son and the mother. It's not something you don't you think at first they're actually on the same team because the patient's son is looking after the patient already. So you think they're on this, they're kind of working together, but you find actually it's the conflict between order and chaos. And the metaphor of the boxed burger ready meals that he's been feeding a mum for ages is here. That's like the son imposing order in order to preserve her mother, who is chaotic. He's trying to handle or box in her schizophrenia and her illness, basically. But and he's kind of being able to do that, but it's the vitamin K deficiency is also a metaphor for how he would not be able to sustain that forever, because the very order that she's trying to impose on a mother and on himself is failing, and that's why she's in hospital, really. Yeah.
Well, the vitamin K deficiency that Gaz is referring to is the fact that when they break into the mother and son's house, they find that he's labelled everything based on the day of the week, that certain clothes should be worn, that certain drugs should be taken. And he's also basically got her diet down to a really basic diet of hamburgers.
Yeah, it's just his ready meal hamburgers.
Yeah, and as Gaz said, it was just this system that he's put in place in order to handle the chaos of his life. But as then turns out, actually, the burgers and all of the food he was giving her wasn't actually sustaining her. So even though he was trying his best to do this, like, he's the reason that she's in hospital, because, you know, you're always on that kid's side that you want him to pull through. But at the end of the day, he's not actually looking after her properly. And that's the real, like, kind of touching human element of the drama here. As much as you want the family to stick together, it's not actually for the best. And there's something extremely, like, terrible and tragic about that.
Well, the key line in the dialogue between the son and House is, he says, "My life is working," and House says, "Well, that's not they're not the words I would use to describe it. Usually a 15-year-old is supposed to be making mistakes, is supposed to be slightly chaotic and trying to find out who they are through a process of, you know, experimentation, etc. And actually, he has no room for that. Everything's regimented, everything's ordered. And in a way, it highlights the role reversal. The mother should be not imposing the order, but instilling some sort of order to his life. And his life should be much more fluid and, you know, prone to chaos than hers. Mm. And yet he's in this situation where he's having to confront the realities of mental illness in such a way, and also other illnesses that require caring, such a way that it's not sustainable. And you see that his mother starts to realize that and finds the means to try and fix it for him.
Yeah, completely. Which then actually, like, but then the great thing about that is that it's actually then medically relevant, because, as you say, the mother becomes aware of that situation, makes a decision to then call child protective services in order to have her son taken away. And her son then believes that House is responsible for that. And which then goes on, because House sees that as an incredibly rational thing for the mother to do. He then actually starts to doubt that she has schizophrenia at all, which then goes on to lead to the final diagnosis. But that kind of, like, push and pull of medical plot and, like, human drama plot just is so good in this episode. Like, they both really feed on each other really well. I guess, like, the Socratic method, I'm not sure if that is going too far.
No, I think, it is the dialectic between those two things of adhering, you know, order and chaos, and how do you kind of manage those two opposing forces and what comes out of it and who's supposed to be on what side. We also get to a point where House is trying to subvert medical guidelines using alcohol to shrink his tumor that, according to those guidelines, is too big.
Yeah.
So that he can convince the surgeon to operate. And so there's a bit of deception there.
Yeah, well, the I think it gives a bit of it gives a little bit of weight to Wilson as well, because Wilson is brought onto this. He's more involved in this episode because cancer is involved, and Wilson is a He's an oncologist. There we go. That's the one. But yeah, Wilson is more involved in this one. I quite like that Wilson goes along with the alcohol shrinking scheme. I think it gives a bit of characterization to Wilson that, you know, even though he sort of houses, you know, more moral conscious, like he's houses consciousness, conscience, but like
conscience,
Wilson will also, like, he's not a goody two shoes. He will, if he sees that, you know, a doctor is not gonna, you know, try and cure someone's life for the sake of a centimeter of tumor, he will be involved to shrink that tumor in order to get that person on the table and get that sorted out. Which I think lends a little bit more weight to Wilson, which I think is going to be explored more in future episodes, but it's nice to see it here finally.
Yeah, because you think he's a bit of a goody two shoes. He does look like the quintessential TV doctor type figure, you know, but we're starting to see House is very good at getting him to do things that he wants, but also that he's willing to do it when he thinks it's right.
Mm. Yeah, it makes him more of a ethically complex person.
Yeah. The other thing that's really interesting is that it's a continuation of, in the dialogue between Cuddy and House, the continuation of their cat and mouse kind of little proxy wars that they have between each other, these little battles where Cuddy's always chasing House to figure out what he's doing. Why is he doing this? Whatever. It's really interesting.
Well, on the subject of character growth, there's also a little bit from Chase. I think Chase, most of the characters have had their backgrounds explored. We saw a little bit about Wilson's affair. We know about Cameron's complex history with patients. We've then gone into Foreman's background, and like Foreman's been very competitive with House, so Foreman's had like a bit of character growth within the show itself. But Chase has been pretty quiet. Like, he's been a pretty sort of seen as a quite competent, like, just good guy. and in this one, we see his reaction to the way that the child is looking after his mother, because the general, like, way the episode works is that because her condition is so mysterious, everyone comes up with different solutions. So Foreman's is just, hey, it's the schizophrenia. Cameron's is, I forget what Cameron's thesis is.
Was it the cancer thing?
Yeah, Cameron comes up with cancer. Chase's idea is that it's alcohol-based, because the kid gives his mother alcohol in order to calm her down. And even though the kid says, look, I'm only giving her a little bit of alcohol to calm her down, Chase, because we start to see that because of Chase's background, he clearly has a thing about, like, alcohol. He suspects that it's always a problem. And we start to learn that Chase might or may not have had an alcoholic parent that he was forced to look after, which just gives us just a little look into the kind of person Chase is.
A tiny little peek.
Very tiny. But Chase, there's even a nice moment where the kid asks Chase, like, how would you be handling this situation? Like, you just give up. And Chase even admits, he's like, no, I'd do it exactly like you. Because, like, it's kind of nice, that idea that Chase isn't... everyone assumes that because Chase comes from a wealthy background, that he's therefore had a good life. And, you know, Chase points out to Foreman that, you know, just because people are drinking better alcohol doesn't mean they're not alcoholics. And that kid assumes that because he's a doctor, he's just being, like, authoritative and doesn't understand. But Chase is actually coming from a position of, I do understand what your situation is. I was you once. And even though it's a tiny peek, it gives this nice little flip on Chase's character, that even though he's, like, a very attractive, like, seemingly well-rounded person, that doesn't mean that he hasn't been through things.
Mm. So we're at a point now where the surgeon has removed it, albeit really angrily, from the patient. So she's now been the cancer has been removed and she's going to be on chemotherapy to kind of put her into remission. And Chase and the son are talking to each other, like you said. And this is the moment where you start getting an insight into Chase's character a little bit, that he has a few demons of his own. And he's sympathetic, but not entirely...
Yeah, I like that all the characters have little demons. It can be a bit forced if every character has like huge drama going on. But at the moment, it's just hinted that, you know, everyone has a history, everyone has a story. And it's just nice that that's coming out, not in a really overt way. This is then the bit where the Child Protective Services turn up.
Those damn bureaucrats are coming in.
Well, I love the Child Protective Services woman. Like, she, I think at one point she says, like, let's not make this difficult. Which is like, I can't imagine saying that to a child. Like, she is just the most heartless person in the world. A lot of the extra characters in this are very simple. Like a lot of the patients in the clinic are just really dumb. And a lot of the, like, police officers and people from child services is just, like, insanely uncaring.
All monotone voice as well. Ah, meh, 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 meh. Let's not make this difficult.
She walks in and she's just like, let's not have any trouble here.
What is the kid going to do?
I know, like, why are you working with children if you have that attitude? Her accomplice doesn't even say anything, which I feel sorry for the actor that he just has to stand around. He may as well not be in the scene, but it's just hilarious that they've sent two people in to remove
authority
a 15-year-old child. And they don't say anything like, oh, you know, take a moment to say goodbye to your mother. They're just like, let's not cause any problems.
Don't act out now.
But on the Chase subject, another interesting thing I noticed, focusing on the Socratic method theme, is that, and House says this at the end, he said that, like, everyone by the end has a theory. And House even says, you know, you go to a neurologist, someone will tell you that it's a neurological problem. You go to a radiologist, they'll tell you it's, like, a problem associated with radiology. You go to an oncologist, they'll tell you it's cancer. And, like, Wilson thought the problem was cancer. Cameron thought the problem was cancer. Foreman, who's a neurologist, thought it was just the schizophrenia. And Chase, who comes from an alcoholic background, assumes it's the alcohol.
Yeah, and cirrhosis.
He thinks it's cirrhosis, the liver. And it's this nice way that all of the characters have a theory which is kind of based on the bias of their life or their professional background. And it's from them all competing that they finally discover the truth. And once again, it's like, it's a really nice way that we learn about kind of the biases of the characters. And yet we kind of explore the theme of the episode, which is the Socratic method. And then everything's resolved through that mechanism.
Yeah. And also, I think adding to that, it's just a very elegant way to turn confirmation biases and then explore them and say, okay, well, why do they have these weird confirmation biases where Chase is really adamant it's an alcoholic, there's alcoholism that's causing these issues. Like the deep, well, he's more focused on the deep vein thrombosis issue. And he just is convinced.
Mm.
He's convinced by his own experience that that must be the case. And there you go. And it's just a very good tool to use that theory and say, well, actually, behind the theory, there are all these values that are being bounced off and all these experiences being bounced off to get to that conclusion. And actually, although useful, because you have to explore it in order to eliminate it as a possibility, it gets solved. And you can also explore the character at the same time. So what I'm basically saying, it's very economical. It's a very economical way to explore characters and resolve the plot at the same time.
Yeah, completely.
So crazy, but that's what I meant.
Yeah, that waffle was uneconomical, as all of our waffles are. But I agree with the economy of the plot. It's I know we keep coming back to this, but I think you and I just agree that just thematically this is just an extremely well written episode.
Yes.
While the last two episodes have been very good for like character traits, like growing character and character development and some drama. This just does everything really well. And it's really the first time that everything is pulled together like that.
Yeah.
Aside from the happy birthday thing.
Yeah, of course.
It's a little bit flabby. It's nice. It's nice that it's there. It doesn't take up any time.
Takes a dram of whiskey. He's had his Eureka moment.
Well, yes, the Eureka moment takes place in House's house.
House's home.
Where he is, you know, he's celebrating his birthday by himself, and then he gets an idea. And there's quite a nice comparison here in that House has an idea. He suddenly does all the research for it, and he starts calling up her ex-doctors to get further information. And he attempts to call the doctor a few times, like pretending to be different people. But because it's out of hours, the doctor is uninterested in talking to him. And I think it's quite funny that he could probably wait till the morning and solve this. But because of the guy he is, he just can't shut it off. And it also kind of demonstrates that difference that House was trying to say about, like earlier, about why he's a different doctor compared to other doctors. In a way, this kind of like proves that and backs it up in that House is such an obsessive doctor that he will, at 2 a.m, decide to treat a patient and be ready to go.
Yeah.
Whereas other doctors are like, I'm clocked off, don't call me. And so in a way, actually, I guess it kind of proves House's point.
Yeah, it's making him stand out from everybody else. I mean, it's also a play on the kind of trope in medical dramas where doctors get phoned up late at night and they go, what? Who is this? Oh. And then they have to go out in late at night to solve an issue. He's the guy on the other side of the phone. He's a doctor asking another doctor late at night to tell him something. So it acts as a kind of like aping a trope and also at the same time setting him apart from the other kind of traditional or stereotypical doctors. But I'm sure all doctors are as qualified and competent as House, I'm sure.
And caring.
Of course.
So after all of that, after all that headbutting, after all that going nowhere, there is... Yeah, the Eureka moment kind of solves it on this one. Yeah, like, this is one of the episodes where the Eureka moment is what ties it all together, because then House gets everyone in a room and says, I've had an idea, name some ideas, and everyone just throws everything out on the table.
Yeah, and also, and then, yeah.
And then the condition is actually solved very quickly after that. I think Cameron doesn't even know the name of the condition, which is quite funny. She just says, oh, I think it's a thing to do with, like, too much copper in the body. I can't remember the name. And then they pull together the name by, like, working together. Which I guess once again is the theme of the episode with the Socratic method, in that everyone pulls together through sort of like stumbling towards the answer through dialogue and discussion.
Yeah.
But it's more interesting than House just walking in and saying, oh, it's like Wilson's disease. It's quite nice that he gets everyone together, and then everyone, like, his Eureka moment is he has an idea about where they should go, but then it's kind of everyone stumbling through things that they kind of half remember, which gets them towards their actual final diagnosis. I think that's a more interesting way of showing it than what sometimes happens is when House just comes up with an obscure disease that he remembers.
Yeah. Also a little nice cinematographic moment where the spinning and it flashes forward through the spinning. It's a good one.
Yes. Did Bryan Singer direct this? That is a very crazy camera technique.
No. Not this time around.
He does love them.
Oh, it looks like the bureaucrats have allowed the sun to come back.
They have. He's not gone for very long. He's only gone for about 6 minutes.
Well, I mean, in their time, in our time, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
It's not like they just shooed him off in the car, and then 6 minutes later, your mum's cured. We'll let you back. And she's cured in 6 minutes, reading like Yeats in super speed.
And then there's this nice moment, because they do cure the mother, and it turned out she didn't have schizophrenia. She had Wilson's disease. There's actually a nice moment where the mother is cured. So you get a very kind of fairy tale happy ending in which it's not like even after they cure her, they send her back and they, you know, the son still has to look after his ill mother.
Mm.
But there's a nice moment where Chase sees them hugging, and it's this kind of slightly sad moment where like Chase is, you know, if Chase didn't get that happy ending,
yes.
Chase was the kid who then had to go home and continue that life that he didn't want to lead. And it's, in a way, it's very bittersweet. It's like you're very happy for the characters, but knowing that Chase then had to live that worse version of the story that he was warning that kid about, he was like, you don't want to go back to that, but he had to go back to it.
Yeah.
There's something extremely depressing about that.
That is, which is just yes. sort of, yeah. Yeah, it's extremely depressing and bittersweet.
Do you find it weird that the mother lets House... Well, House passes the blame on to Cuddy, but the mother lets House take the blame for calling child services. Like, it's really weird that she doesn't say anything, because I think the kid would fully understand why she did it.
I don't know. This kid is very dead set on being betrayed. He doesn't like being betrayed at all. I'm sure he'll just... if House was to reveal that, he'd probably just take her to the top floor in a wheelchair and rush her out onto the street, off the top floor of the building and onto the pavement. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy who can deal with betrayal very well. That's my thinking.
No, that's fair. Maybe he's untrustworthy. And then there's this nice moment at the end where House says, actually, now that she's cured, she's not interesting, which I'm not entirely sure I really believe House when he says things like that.
Yeah.
I do think he's more of a people person than he lets on, given that he has a relationship with Wilson, and Wilson's not like crazy interesting. Like, if Wilson was schizophrenic and House found him fascinating, I kind of get it. But, you know, it's not like Wilson's a pretty like normal, intelligent man, and House gets on with him very well. But it's, you know, I mean, it's nice that House even, like, kind of plays into that and says, oh, she's boring now. But I'm not entirely sure how much I believe him.
Well, it's the problem solver element of, is it, of it at the moment. I think the character is still going through, it's still very vague whether he's driven by problems or by people or by both. I think sometimes you get these hints that it's about the people, and then sometimes you get this idea that he's kind of... only interested in the problem or the clinical problem. So it's a bit fluid at the moment. What are his motives? What drives House to do what he does? I don't think we've really got a grasp on that yet.
No, but the good thing is that it's not like, the good thing is it's a kind of, even though it feels like, oh, he's obsessed with the problem now, as you've noticed, the fact that he makes big grand gestures showing how he's different to other doctors, there's definitely an underlying ego to his character, which suggests that he actually enjoys being that kind of enigmatic like person that people don't really get. And so even though he can say, oh, I don't find her interesting now, she has schizophrenia, like that later could then play into, like, it's more him trying to uphold a kind of like icon of himself, like a cliche of what he is. He's like this genius, like lonesome doctor. And in some ways he kind of gets off on being known as that, rather than actually, he probably does just like people, but he just then at the end just goes, actually, no, I didn't find them interesting at all, because he wants to keep up that kind of like idea of himself among his peers.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting. It makes House very petty in a lot of ways.
Well, I think it's the friction, but that sort of behavior is the friction between his genius and his narcissism.
Yeah.
When those things collide, he does these weird gestures that he are supposed to resoundingly solve problems. And in fact, most of the time they do. But also on the other hand, there's this other element where he does feel a need to deal with the human side of the problem. And that's another contact point between his genius and his ethics. So there are these like three things that are kind of always in constant conflict with each other: his genius, his ethics, and his narcissism. And it's always a battle between the two to try and A, do the right thing, B, do the right thing and look really good doing the right thing, which might mean being a little bit detached, and also see, be true to his abilities and to what he thinks is the right way to do medicine, which is his ingenuity, That's his special skill, is that he can do medicine really, really well.
That was almost too good of a summation, Gaz. I think I might edit this out or else we'll have nothing to explore or discuss.
Oh, my God.
I think you've got to the heart of it. Sure.
Well, right. We've diagnosed House. Let's end the podcast. I'm done.
Differentially diagnosed after 6 episodes. Fantastic. Well, so, we've now got to the episode, end of the episode in real time, but I feel like we've gotten to the end of the episode in terms of discussion, unless you have anything else that you want to touch on.
The only thing I want to say is that was a very well written and conceived episode. There was just the reason why this podcast might seem a little bit more dispersed and more multifaceted, and we might be going off in very different directions to try and discuss the episode, is because there was so much to talk about. There's such a rich subject matter, such as mental illness and its interaction with medicine, and then you've got all this character stuff that's going on all the time. What might seem like incoherence is really dealing with the diverse range of content that was in that episode, and in my opinion it was done so well and tied up so well that, you know, it scores an A for plot, B for characterizations. It scores an A for characterization. It scores an A for economic writing. And it scores A star for being a great House MD episode.
I'd agree. I think there's I think you're right on the, I'll also join in on the excuse of why sometimes, you know, it seems a bit rambly, but unless we like formatted this into a proper essay, I don't think you can, like, there's so many elements of it. I'd say in the previous episodes of this, we've just watched it and sort of talked about what's going on as it goes on, because it'll be like, there'll be a scene with a bit of character development from Chase or Foreman or Cameron, then a twist, and or something funny that happens that we can discuss. But this one's like so tied together. Things that are mentioned at the start of the episode are then kind of like reiterated throughout in, you know, the character motivations, the medicine itself, in a lot of the patient drama. And it kind of just keeps coming back, and it really ties itself well into this Socratic method theme that it's just done extremely well. I'd say this is probably the messiest episode we've done in terms of discussing it, but there's not really any other way to do it, because there's so many, it's not like we can just talk about it as things happen. There were so many facets of this episode which were being reworked on themselves.
Yeah.
And being built on. So I think this is I think since episode 4 this show has gotten really good. But this is just like, this is pinnacle House MD. This is where everything is tied together thematically. This is a fantastic episode. And that would be our differential diagnosis. Totally cured.
Pinnacle and clinical.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, that's good. I'm glad that we watched a good episode and enjoyed it and had a lot to talk about.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Harvey, for having me on as the co-host as usual.
That's fine. Thanks for co-hosting. I guess I'm also the co-host because we co-host. So thanks for having me on, Gaz.
Not a problem.
My pleasure.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
Well, I hope that if anyone's been following this from the start, I hope that you watched the episode along with us, enjoyed it, have similar thoughts. We're on Spotify and places. I'm not sure where there is to give your thoughts, but if you can tweet us at HouseMDcast now. That's our Twitter handle. Our Twitter is called Differential Diagnosis after the show. And tweet us with your thoughts or any feelings you had about the episode. I think that's probably the best way of getting in touch with us. Yes. But until next week, next time, Monday morning, GMT. So don't be on the Eastern Seaboard confused about where it is.
It's BST at the moment, British Summer Time.
It's BST. But I think as long as you're over to the Western Hemisphere, we'll be there Monday morning. If it's to the Eastern Hemisphere, we might be in the afternoon, but it's not our fault. You just live in the wrong place for Monday morning.
But yeah, thanks very much for watching, and join us next week when we'll be talking about episode 7. I can't actually remember the name of the episode.
Fidelity.
Enjoy us. Join us then.